or lease from...
The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh, my gracious, yep. How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot nail thinking right for a nose.
Clenzo strikes with a minute and a half left.
Hey guys, welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Really appreciate you guys downloading the podcast all season long. We have just 3 weeks left of college football before the bowl season begins. And man, what a ride it's been. We've got a lot to talk about today. My guest is Tom Luganbill from ESPN, an old buddy of mine from ESPNU. A few weeks ago, I had Matt Schick on the show. We used to do a little show called Power Hour. Now I've got Tom on as well. Tom is an absolute brilliant mind when it comes to college football. If you have never listened to Tom Luganbill call a game, which you probably have, but really listen to Tom, I would put his football knowledge up against anybody in all of football. The guy understands the game. He sees the game. He obviously knows recruiting inside and out as the recruiting director for ESPN.com. And he's just a tremendous analyst who does fantastic work, whether he's on the sideline, on the booth, or in the studio. One of the best TV analysts I've ever worked with. I really mean that. I wouldn't say that about anybody. I haven't said that about anybody. Not to say that my other guests haven't been fantastic, but I don't know if there's anybody else I would rather talk college football with. So very excited that he joined me to talk on today's episode for about 20, 25 minutes. Hope you guys enjoy it. We talk all about the playoff rankings, about what might happen over the next few weeks, about Miami. Yes, they're back. They look good. I get it. But we'll talk about Miami. We'll talk about Alabama. All sorts of things as we prepare you guys for week 12 in college football. But first, listen up, Hoops fans. Basketball season is back, and now that your favorite hardwood heroes have returned to action, it's time for you to put your fantasy knowledge to the test to win huge cash prizes every night playing one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings.com. At DraftKings, there are so many ways to play. Choose from public contests with huge cash prizes or private contests where you can compete against your friends. They've even got beginner and casual contests. I love that, where you'll play against people of a similar skill level. The best part is you get to draft a new team each day, and drafting a team is arguably the best part of fantasy. The only thing better is winning cash while doing it. Just ask Dan from St. Louis or Jeremy from Austin. They both turned a $3 entry into $1,000. Huge cash prizes and bragging rights await only at DraftKings. Use the code CLNS at DraftKings.com to play free with your first deposit for your share of $10,000 in total prizes tonight. Don't wait. Use the code CLNS at DraftKings.com now to choose your lineup, and you can seriously cash in tonight. That's code CLNS only at DraftKings.com. The game inside the game. Don't forget there is a minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, and now I welcome on Tom Luganbill from ESPN, an old buddy of mine from ESPNU. Tom, you do some sideline reporting. You were in the booth last night for some action up at the Ohio game. The Bobcats, a little bit of an upset loss there. You were talking about it before we started. That was a heck of a game. How's Maction going every week before we get started?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. You know, I always joke about those games, and I've done them for years. You know, those teams, they're all so similar. They're all recruiting the same athlete. They all look exactly the same. And really the difference is the quarterback. I mean, it's a quarterback-driven league because that's the great equalizer and the X factor. You could take all those teams, change all their uniforms, and you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between one team and another except for the quarterback position. And that's really what stands out. Just a really competitive league top to bottom.
Yeah, it's always a lot of fun. You always get some high-scoring games. And Ohio, kind of a surprising loss for them. But we won't spend too much time on the Bobcats on this podcast. I think people want to hear more about the playoff, which also the rankings came out last night during your game, actually. So just a quick recap for the people listening. You know, the top six right now, it's Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Miami moves up to 3, Oklahoma 4, and then Wisconsin and Auburn knocking on the door, Georgia at 7. Tom, what were your reactions to the rankings? And then who is your top four at this point?
You know, my top four is actually the exact same order that the committee went with. In fact, we came up with our rankings last night, put them on air before theirs came out. And mine ended up being identical. The top four, my difference is that I have Auburn at number 5. And quite frankly, if I were to base it just on how teams are playing right now, I'm not so sure that Auburn would make a strong argument for being in the top four, even though they've got two losses. But because they do have two losses, I've decided to hold them out for one slot. You know, I've been very fortunate this year, Josh. I've been able to see so many of the top 10 teams in person. You know, seeing Alabama last week, seeing Wisconsin the week before, seeing TCU the week before that. And so it's really been good to be able to kind of gauge these teams against one another. And, you know, I can see where the committee went with Oklahoma. I know a lot of people were clamoring for a two or three slot, but I just think the committee and the coaches that are on that committee have real concerns about the defensive play in the conference top to bottom, which includes Oklahoma.
Yeah, well, before we talk about Oklahoma, because I want to talk about that defense. I have some pretty strong thoughts on that. But you saw Wisconsin up close in person. I don't see why you can rank Wisconsin in the top five. I mean, they have really kind of just ho-hummed their way through the season. They've had a couple somewhat impressive wins. I mean, I think if you look at their resume, their best win was just Saturday night against Iowa by 24. That doesn't come close to stacking up with the rest of the top six or seven teams and what they've put on paper, even teams that have lost a game. Now, you've seen Wisconsin up close and in person. What do you make of the Badgers in comparing them with the other top six or seven teams in these rankings?
Well, first off, I'd agree with you on the schedule. In fact, prior to the Iowa game, you could make an argument that the best team they've played is Florida Atlantic and Lane Kiffin's group down in Florida. Listen, this is what Wisconsin is. They are a blue-collar, play-hard, don't-beat-yourself, capitalize on an opponent's mistakes type of football team. That's what they do, and they're really, really good at it. And what isn't impressive about them is they're not dynamic. They're not a team that you feel like if they got behind by two touchdowns or if they got behind by, 24, you have no feel that they'd be able to recover from that because they're not an explosive team. But where I do give them a lot of credit is the fact that they're the type of team that if you make a mistake, they're going to capitalize, and then it starts to snowball, and they're able to take a football game and turn it into something that you wouldn't imagine it would be before the ball is kicked off. But I, to be honest with you, Josh, I think their quarterback is the biggest detriment. I do not see him being a difference maker. I don't see him being a guy that could win the game for them if he had to.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, like you're describing Wisconsin, and in some ways, there's some parallels there. It sounds like to Georgia in some ways, where with Georgia, awfully one-dimensional. We saw that come to fruition on Saturday against Auburn, where they were in a game where Auburn could actually neutralize their rushing attack, and Jake Fromm, quite honestly, couldn't beat Auburn. Wisconsin hasn't played an Auburn, so it seems to me a little unfair that we're going to rank Wisconsin ahead of a team like Georgia, who just so happened to run up against a team that's far more prepared to slow down a team like them or what the Badgers are than anybody Wisconsin's faced. It's just kind of, it's tough for me. I think Georgia's a better football team than Wisconsin, even after this past weekend. I have a hard time justifying Wisconsin as a top five team. And you have them at six, I think, like you said, but it's just, I don't know. If Wisconsin runs the table, they're going to get in. Do you think that they would deserve it, assuming nothing absolutely insane happens with the top four or five teams ahead of them? Do you think Wisconsin would deserve a playoff spot at 13-0?
Well, I tend to look at it this way. If we're going to have conference affiliation, and we're going to have a line of demarcation between the Power Five and the Group of Five, if you go undefeated in a Power Five conference, regardless of conference, and you don't make it into the playoff, then what do we have conferences for? Mm-hmm. That's kind of been my reaction to Wisconsin. Would I think they're one of the top four best teams in college football? No. But at the same time, it would be a whole different dynamic if we just had a bunch of Power Five teams with no conference affiliation, so it didn't matter whether you won a conference or not. Then you can see more of a justification by not taking a Wisconsin. But if you don't, then why do we even have conferences?
Well, here would be my rebuttal to that. We only have four playoff spots. So your argument makes total sense. But with the limited amount of playoff spots, there's less playoff spots than there are conference champions. So while on in the one hand, you are granting these conferences a little bit of a, you know, a higher prestige and more of a chance to get in by winning their conference. But winning a conference doesn't guarantee you a playoff spot, because every year one team's going to get left out no matter what. So to me, it sounds like you're arguing, and I'm leading you down this path. Would you rather see an 18 playoff? I don't want to go down that whole argument here, but if you're going to only keep it at four, I'm not going to necessarily just put a team in that wins its conference into one of those top four. If I think that a runner up in another league is better, I would want to put that team in.
I don't disagree with you. I think where the conference champion comes into play is it becomes a trump card.
Right.
And it becomes a tiebreaker if it's close in the room, because it's an opportunity for the committee to protect themselves. And I think that is something that gets put into play when you talk about the conference championship. Now, I'm not a fan of an 18 playoff.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a fan of a 16 playoff where you give the top two seeds a bye.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say I'm not a fan of eight, and I see college football every single week in person across this country, and as you know, I've studied it for a long time.
Yeah.
There are not eight teams in major college football that are national championship caliber teams. Now, are there eight teams that you say could maybe compete for a playoff spot? Yeah. But there's really only 5 to 6 teams that are bona fide national championship caliber teams. And I think if you went beyond six, you'd be diluting the field and you'd be diminishing the value of the regular season.
Yeah, that makes sense. It'd be interesting to see what that eight teams does. I made a point earlier this week that when we went to four, the big kind of criticism that a lot of people said was it's going to devalue the regular season. That was the kind of the buzzword you heard all the time. And they thought that was going to kind of ruin it. Well, it has devalued the regular season, but what it hasn't done is taken away any of the entertainment value. The entertainment value of college football is at an all-time high. Every week, every game, we're on the edge of our seats. College football is as popular now as it's ever been. But Clemson can lose to Syracuse and Oklahoma can lose to Iowa State. You can lose a game and it's not as calamitous as it was before. And that's a difference. It hasn't changed how much we are entertained by the sport, but it has devalued the importance of winning every single game. I don't think that's really up for debate. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I would, but I think that we also got to understand, as fans of college football with such limited opportunities, that and how competitive the game is, but so different than basketball, where you have a multitude of opportunities,
sure,
that you've got to expect that in today's day and age, to go undefeated in a Power Five conference is becoming a very, very rare commodity.
Yeah.
And I believe that if you're going to have a loss and you're in a Power Five conference, and you know, you go out and just on one given day you don't have your best day, and you lose a game, I don't think that should be an indictment of you as an overall team, considering that the season is so, so short. Now, I say that, but if you happen to be a team that's supposed to be a playoff caliber team, and you go out and lay an egg and lose by 27 to a team that finishes 2-10,
right?
Now that's a different animal. But you know, look at Iowa State's proven to be a pretty good football team.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse is a competitive ball club in the ACC, and if you're Clemson, you know, you go on the road and your conference game, you play the majority of the game without your starting quarterback, and so there's going to be factors that come into play in regards to that. But holding one loss against the team, to me, given the landscape of college football right now, I think it's a bit ill-advised.
Yeah, I agree. The thing that I look for the most when I'm ranking my teams and I'm trying to decide who makes the playoff, I want to see, are you consistent? Are you consistently good, consistently dominant against the teams that you should dominate? And do you win and play well against the better teams on your schedule? Like the likes of before last week, Notre Dame had a ton of quality wins, and in their loss, played toe-to-toe with a top-five team. That was a really strong resume to me. Obviously, now it looks a little bit different after the loss to Miami. Miami, but that was a good one-loss resume to me. You were competitive in the one game you lost against a great team, and you took care of business. There was really no Notre Dame game prior to last week was in doubt. I mean, they handled every team on their schedule. Wake, I think, came closer to beating them than anybody. So, and that was still an 11-point game. So that's kind of the resume. That's my kind of, I guess, criteria. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few weeks. And that's what I want to ask you now. Let's talk about the Power 5 conferences and really let's forget about the Pac-12 here. But I just want your prediction on who you think is ultimately going to win each of these leagues. Forget about the playoff for a second. Right now, it's Clemson, Miami, and the ACC. We know how well Miami's playing. Who wins that league? Who do you think wins that game in Charlotte in a couple weeks? Hey guys, quick break to talk about my bookie. I know you guys love to gamble. That's why you listen to this podcast. And holiday cash, you need it, and I know where to get it. My bookie is the place to score serious cash on your sports predictions. Believe it or not, the holidays are just around the corner, and while that means plenty of parties, gifts, and spending, it also means there's lots of football, basketball, and hockey games you can score big on every day. Man up and play like the pros on game day. You can play the money line, side, or total. My bookie is the hookup for all your betting needs and offers super fast payouts when you win. When you bet, it's just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make your money betting the games, you got to go to mybookie.ag. They're the only site I recommend. I trust them, but you don't have to take my word for it. Check them out yourself. They have odds on every matchup and a mobile site that makes wagering on your smartphone a breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to a 50% bonus. Use the promo code college50 to activate the offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. And now let's go back to Tom.
You know, I want to say Clemson because I do think top to bottom they're the better football team. Mm-hmm. But I also think Miami is one of those teams, and I've had the chance to see them in person as well. I think they might be one of those teams that's just having that year, having that moment. And sometimes when you have that year, you have that moment similar to Auburn's 2010 team, mm-hmm. where everything you need to happen happens. You make a couple of outstanding plays here. You get a break there. Next thing you know, you fall into this complete wave of momentum, and you capitalize on it, and it just happens. And maybe you beat a couple teams that you shouldn't. It's just one of those years for Miami, and if that thing closes out that way, then to be honest with you, I think Miami will win the ACC. Unless they were to just go in the tank, or you know, a lot of people may feel that they're playing above themselves right now. Maybe they are to some degree, but I still think that defensively they're as good as anybody in college football.
Yeah, I mean, and they're relying, I mean, we know about the turnover chain, but they're relying a lot on turnovers, and they're one of the top teams. I think they're number two in the country in turnover margin. Those things tend to regress over time, and there was obviously no doubt on the field who was the better team in that Notre Dame game, but when you're winning a lot of close games and you're that to the positive in the turnover margin, that shows me that you're vulnerable. I wonder if Miami doesn't play in that same sort of atmosphere that they've had the last 2 weeks with something to prove. Now all of a sudden this is the Miami team that, you know, everyone's patting them on the back again. Is this right? Do they kind of regress a little bit? Because when we saw them in the first seven games, everyone told them that they were a top 10 team. There was really no adversity, and they played down to their competition. Now the last 2 weeks, they had their backs against the wall, and people were kind of doubting them, and they played with a chip on their shoulder, and they came out and played the type of football we expected them to play all season long. So I'm curious to see what they do the next 2 weeks. Obviously, I think motivation wouldn't be a factor in the Clemson game, but yeah, I mean, Miami's playing extremely well. That's going to be a tough game. I still think Clemson ultimately wins as long as Kelly Bryant's healthy. I mean, I think Clemson probably has the best resume in the country when Kelly Bryant has been healthy. It's just a matter of that one game that he was hurt and coming back from it even in the weeks afterwards. But yeah, that's going to be a heck of a game. And if Miami loses a close one, they might have a case for the playoff. Let's talk about the SEC. Alabama or Auburn against Georgia. Of those three teams, who do you think ultimately comes out of that circus in the SEC?
You know, this is going to sound crazy. I'm going to go way out on a limb here, and I'm going to say Auburn.
Wow, okay.
I'm going to say Auburn by beating Alabama and then taking on Georgia again. And listen, they might be – you know, you always hear coaches talking about being healthy, peaking at the right time, playing your best football in November down the stretch. Auburn checks all those boxes right now. And I think Alabama, after seeing them this past weekend, as talented as they are and as tough as they are, they're also a bit vulnerable right now. We haven't seen an Alabama team with significant injuries at multiple positions in the month of November like we've seen this year. And really what it's doing is it's showcasing that, hey, they're human too. Now, their drop-off from one guy to the next guy may not be as significant as it is with other teams or just about every other team, but eventually it does catch up with you. And so, am I confident in saying that's what's going to take place? No, but you're asking me. And off of what I saw and what I've seen off of Auburn, I think Auburn might be, like I said, playing their best football at the right time and at the right moment, and they get Alabama at home.
Yeah, exactly. The home thing is a big deal. Look, for Alabama, I thought earlier in the season, I said, I'd be curious to know what you think. I wasn't trying to be outrageous when I said this, but I thought that this was as dominant of an Alabama team as I had seen when healthy, and a lot of it was because of the backfield, which in my mind was the deepest backfield I had seen, probably going back to Miami in the early 2000s when they had Portis and Gore and Davenport and all those guys in that backfield. I mean, you talk about having Scarborough and Damian Harris and Najee Harris, and then I even put Jalen Hurts into that category because he's essentially a running back in what they do in a lot of their offense. I mean, that was just impossible to slow down. Now with the injuries on the defensive side, you saw Alabama up close in person. You're right, they are vulnerable. I still think they're the best team, but the gap is so much narrower than it was 6 weeks ago. And with the way Auburn's playing, like you said, it was kind of interesting. If you looked on paper prior to last week, that Auburn-Georgia game, I thought Auburn was going to win. No one thought they were going to win as badly as they did. The per play numbers, the efficiency numbers, the completion percentage, the turnovers, Auburn was on par with Georgia in almost every single category. It was just that they had lost a couple games and people just assumed that they were a worse team. But Auburn is damn good, and they've got a great defense. And Kerryon Johnson, I mean, Baker Mayfield's pretty much locked up the Heisman, but good Lord, Kerryon Johnson should be getting more attention than he is. I mean, the numbers he has put up and playing the way he did against Georgia, I mean, it'd be hard to go against Auburn at this point. I couldn't blame you. I'm not confident in any one of those three teams. I don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, with Auburn and Georgia, you know, Auburn did the one thing that Georgia had been able to avoid, and that was put them in obvious passing situations and win at the line of scrimmage on first and second down, because now you make a true freshman quarterback a true freshman.
Right.
The game goes on his shoulders in a hostile environment where you're playing against the best defense. You've played probably above your head to this point. And they got exposed a little bit. And Auburn, they're the only team that's been able to do that so far.
Yeah, exactly. It was one thing. People looked at Fromm's performance against Notre Dame, and they were like, well, you know, look, he went on the road against Notre Dame. That was barely a road game. that stadium was red in September. And Georgia was not number one. They didn't have the target on their back that they did. It's a totally different animal in mid-November on the plains in Auburn, going up in that environment is way different than what he faced in South Bend. So, yeah, that was the first time all season that he had faced that kind of adversity, and it obviously caught up to them. Two more conferences I want to predict right here. The Big Ten, it looks like it's going to be Ohio State. Michigan still has an outside chance, but they're going to play Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. Do you think Wisconsin gets it done, or do you think the Buckeyes end up winning the Big Ten?
I would venture on put my money to the table on Ohio State. I just think that athletically they would be very, very difficult for Wisconsin to match up with. And in that type of environment is where I think Alex Honeybrook would get exposed.
Right.
I think he would throw the ball to the other team. I think he would play with ghosts and shadows around him the majority of the ball game. It would be very, very tough sledding for them. And athletically, that's not a good matchup. Now, playing Iowa, that's a pretty good matchup. Playing Michigan State, pretty good matchup. But Ohio State, I don't like it.
Did you watch any film of that Iowa game? What the hell happened? The Ohio State Iowa game.
A drunken hangover from the week before.
I mean,
you know, everybody, and that can happen when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old kids. You know, you made the the reference earlier about Miami and everybody patting them on the back telling how good they are, probably a pretty healthy dose of that was residing in Iowa City for a full 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you had to turn around and play a game. And again, that is one of the positives. If you're going to point out why Wisconsin is where they are, they don't get caught up in all of that stuff. They don't get caught up in the highs of everybody telling they're good. They don't get caught up in the lows of everybody telling they're overrated and they have no business being there. They just take the field and play. And I think that's a reflection of the coaching staff and Paul Chris and the even keel of each and every week being exactly the same for them.
Yeah, I mean, the thankfully thing for them is they could get through the next 2 weeks. They just have pretty much a one-game season, and if they could knock off Ohio State, then they'd probably get in. The Big 12, the last conference, and I'll let you go, Tom. Oklahoma probably going to rematch TCU. TCU has to play Texas Tech and Baylor. It's almost a lock that they're going to make it in, even though I should mention Kenny Hill dealing with an injury. We don't know what it is, but he's, I guess, questionable for this game against Texas Tech. We know the Red Raiders can score, so if TCU is kind of limited on offense, Darius Anderson out for the year, too, maybe that game's not a gimme. But TCU's a contender. If they fall by the wayside, it would be probably Oklahoma State against Oklahoma. Who do you think comes out of the Big 12? Is it the Sooners conference to lose?
Yeah, I think it is. And listen, relative to the rest of the conference, is Oklahoma a championship caliber team on defense? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Are they good enough in that conference? Probably so. But they're so good on offense. They are so good on offense. And it's not just because of Baker Mayfield. I think the one area that's getting so overshadowed, that is by a mile the best offensive line in the Big 12. It's reminiscent of some teams in the Big 10 and some of the better teams like a Mississippi State in the SEC. They are so dominant up front that it's taken the whole air raid and turned it into a ground raid. So now all of a sudden you've got this spread offense that at any given moment can line up and hand the ball off 30 times. There are very few spread offensive teams. In fact, I'm pretty sure Mike Leach has probably kicked Lincoln Riley out of the air raid club like he did to Dana Holgorsen a few years back for running the football excessively. But, boy, when an offensive passing game has balance like that, you better be prepared to score at least 50 or you're not going to be in the ballgame.
That's kind of like Florida back in the Urban Meyer days. It's like they spread it out, but they ran the ball so well. I mean, you didn't know how to defend them. And that's Baker Mayfield kind of playing that Tebow role right now and doing it extremely well. The point I'll make about Oklahoma, where do you stand? You point out their defense, and this is the last question I'll ask you. People rip their defense. They rip the whole Big 12 and say, well, they don't play defense. To me, I don't care whether you enjoy it or not. If you don't like watching 55 to 52 games, fine. But it's still football, and they're still winning the games. And the only thing I need to point to, my Exhibit A, if you want to criticize Oklahoma's defense, they went into Columbus and won and held them under 20 points. Okay? Now, this isn't the best Ohio State offense we've ever seen, but the Buckeyes put up 40 on Penn State. This Oklahoma defense, they've won the games. And to me, I mean, the Sooners, could they win the national title? Maybe, probably not. But I can't criticize them if they have that bad of a defense. Their offense, go ahead, like you just said, stop their offense. Good luck. I mean, they're still one of the best teams in the country. They go out and they play and they score more than the other team. That's all that you're supposed to do.
Well, they do. And the problem with the Big 12 right now and their issues on defense, it all starts with trenches. And there actually is not a fixable issue. You're not going to just magically wave this wand that says, poof, all of a sudden defensive linemen are showing up all over the state of Oklahoma, the state of Kansas, and this footprint. It's a league-wide problem in the trenches. And when you watch them, I mean, like I said, TCU is considered to be the best defensive team in that conference, and they're not great in terms of personnel up front on defense. They're just so well coached, and they got good team speed.
Yeah.
But that's really the difference. When you look at Clemson take the field on defense, you see real quickly why spread offenses struggle against them, because they become so overwhelmed up front. And that's something that most of the Big 12 rarely sees during the regular season, unless it's out of conference, as you referenced, with Ohio State. And, you know, on that day, they handle Ohio State's offense. I think J.T. Barrett is really a liability more so than anything else.
Sure.
But the bottom line is they took care of business and won the game.
Yeah, exactly. So we got a couple more weeks left in the season. I'm excited to see how it unfolds. Tom, thanks for joining me, man. What's your game this weekend?
I got Oklahoma at Kansas, so might be doing quite a bit of a studio show for that one.
Phil, in the second half of that one. All right. Cool, man. We'll have fun. Enjoy watching the 2017 Heisman Trophy winner. That'll be fun.
Absolutely. We might only invite one guy to New York.
Exactly. So, hey, man, well, thank you again for joining me, man, and go have lunch with your wife. Take some time off and then get right back to work.
All right, buddy. Thanks, man.
All right. All right, that was Tom Luganbill. Thanks again to him for joining me. He's just an outstanding guy. I wish I could have him on the podcast more, but he's busy calling Matt games on Tuesdays and one of the biggest games of the week on Saturdays and trying to figure out whatever the heck is going on in recruiting in between. He's just such a brilliant guy. And there was so much more I wanted to get to with Tom. I didn't have a chance to get to that. I couldn't talk about the Butch Jones exodus. I will try and touch on that in tomorrow's podcast. Also, the rumors about Jimbo Fisher to Texas A&M, they have a little bit more legs than maybe you would think. That might make a lot of sense. Who could be next in line at Florida State? That's the question I want to answer. And also, we'll talk about the Heisman race as well on Thursday's episode. Plus, my weekly gambling segment. We are rolling this season. Another winning week last week, 4-2. Hope you guys have been following along with the picks. I'll be back tomorrow, Thursday night, Friday morning, whenever you get the podcast. Check it out. I'll be previewing week 12 in college football. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you guys later this week.